It's a Friday News Buzz edition of our program. I'm Ben Kiefer, River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Well, I feel like at this point we need a little bit of Scott Simon's gregarious sports music that he has on the weekend, because the latest NFL draft began yesterday. It will run through the weekend. Did you know the first NFL draft was held in 1936, back when teams didn't even have scouting departments? And get this, the names of players that teams could recruit were written on a blackboard. Today, of course, the process is much more complex. During the current draft, teams are camped out with statisticians, professional scouts, coaches, all trying to pick the very best players to ensure their team has a great next season. Joining me now to talk about the complexity of the behind the scenes at the NFL draft, Nate Kading is with us, joining us by phone. Former NFL place kicker, one of the best there ever was, mostly with the Chargers, and also a former Iowa Hawkeye. Nate Kading, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Jeff Ullman is with us in our Iowa City studio, associate professor in the Tippey College of Business at the University of Iowa. Professor Ullman, Jeff, welcome to our program.
Great to be here.
And one of your research focuses is how sports teams can optimize draft selections, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But, Nate, let me start with you. I'm really interested in the player's perspective. Take us back to the moment that you were drafted. I believe you were the second pick in the third round when you were drafted. What year would that have been?
That would have been 2004. Mm-hmm. Nerve-wracking experience, no doubt about it. You finish up with the bowl game, and in our case, we were down in the Outback Bowl, had just beaten Florida. And I don't know if I've had a longer 3 or 4 month stretch of my life, just kind of waiting to find out where you're going to go. Everything's pretty much out of your hands at that point. The teams have done their evaluation. Really, the only thing they care about is what you've done on the football field on Saturdays as a college player. But of course, you go through the combine and get poked and prodded, and the interview process, and it's a lot of waiting for the end of April, first part of May to come around. And I know that we were getting some feedback from Kansas City, the New York Giants, Buffalo Bills, and San Diego. So we could have picked a spot on the map and ended up anywhere in the country. And, it's a pretty nerve-wracking experience.
So tell me, you said evaluated. All your statistics evaluated. How aware were you in that time waiting for the draft to come up after that Outback Bowl of how you stacked up statistically?
Statistically, right there. But, of course, it's that great comparison of whether what's more important, the stats or the personality and the character. And that's really where the analytics on the back end are really important. But also, how do you, the coaches came in there asking me all these psychological questions and all these things. You don't want to look too much into that, but it's also how they view you in the eyes. Do you work hard? Are you a good person of high character? What are your teammates saying about your coaches? So there, it's one part analytics, statistics, another part character research along the way as well.
Do you remember any of the questions that you found interesting that you were asked to get to the side that's not the analytics, to get to your character?
The NFL, they really don't want the quirky kicker, so I got a lot of questions around, what are your weird superstitions, what are those sort of things, and of course you just try to play it as normal as you possibly can, and nothing really jumps out too much, but they do. All those special teams coaches came into Iowa City. We had six or seven of them here, including a couple of head coaches, and I remember Tom Coughlin. We were inside the bubble at the time. I think where he came in and was working myself out, putting me through some kicking drills, and he took a piece of scrap paper that was laying inside the bubble in the indoor practice facility and threw it in front of me as I was kicking, saying, "All right, we got to mimic the wind in the Meadowlands because it gets really breezy over here." And he was throwing trash in front of my face as I was trying to kick. So they definitely like to mess with you a little bit through the process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that moment that you were drafted, take me back to that exact moment. What happened?
We had some friends and family out. We were out at a golf course here in Iowa City, Corville area, and just kind of waiting and hoping. At that time, they had the first three rounds on the same day, so I was certainly hoping to get picked in that first day. Then I would have waited a whole nother night to get it done. But it was, I remember stepping out a bunch of times. You get a few phone calls, and then all of a sudden a weird number pops up on the phone, a 619 area code, and it was general manager of the San Diego Chargers. He put me on the phone with the head coach, Marty Schottenheimer, and it was 96. Congratulations, you're now a Charger. They put you on the phone with some other guy. He rattles off three or four different jersey numbers. You got to pick one of those right away, and then someone else calls you back 10 minutes later with the flight out to California. So it moves all the waiting for 3 or 4 months, then boom, it all happens in a matter of 5 minutes.
So it really is a draft. You weren't even asked on that telephone call whether you wanted to play for the Chargers.
Oh, no. There's none. no asking. It's pretty much assumed. You got your name in the hat, and you whoever picks you, that's where you're going to go. Especially as a kicker, we can't make a whole lot of demands. So whatever they tell us to do, we just nod our head and say yes.
Nate Kading is with us, along with Jeff Ullman, associate professor in the Tippie College of Business at the University of Iowa, whose research has focused on helping teams as players during the draft. Jeff Ullman, perhaps start off by reminding us how the NFL draft works. We had the player perspective there from Nate Kading. Give us the big picture of what's happening over these few days.
So in the NFL draft, each team is organized or is ordered from worst team to best team by winning percentage from the previous year. So the worst team gets to pick first, and they make their selection, and then the second worst team, and then so forth. And that's round one, when all the teams have made a selection, and then there's another round that's just like that, and then there's seven identical rounds. And so the idea is that the worst teams in the league have the opportunity to improve themselves the most by having first selection.
They have the opportunity to do that, but often or sometimes they don't make that first selection. They trade it away, right?
Right. So this selection, this right to choose a player, so the Houston Texans were the first pick in this year's draft. They have the right to make that selection, or they have the right to actually trade it to another team for compensation, which might be later picks in the draft or picks in the future drafts, like next year's draft and so forth, or even current players on the roster.
How large is the pool to begin with?
Oh, I mean, you have thousands of collegiate players who are eligible for the draft, but roughly about 200, a little over 200 of them actually get selected by a team. And then there's unrestricted. At that point, you become an unrestricted free agent if you're not drafted and maybe invited to a training camp.
So the challenge for the individual team is to pick which players you would like in the order that you would like them, with priorities. But also, you have this other factor. They could be pulled away from you at any time, right?
That's right. So there's two primary sources of uncertainty in a draft, and one of them is what's going to be the value that player will add to your team. And that was what Nate was referring to with all the testing and analysis of the statistics and character evaluation. What they're really trying to do is boil that down and say, like, what kind of value, what kind of impact are you going to have on my squad? And that is uncertain. Clearly, in any industry, that's uncertain when people are hiring. They don't know exactly how you're going, what contribution you're going to make. So that's not unique. It's just maybe more visible in the NFL. The other source of uncertainty that you referred to was the availability of the players in the future. So if you're currently making a selection, say, at the 10th pick overall in the draft, and you might be considering a cornerback and a wide receiver, it's conceivable that your choice between the position of the player that you select may depend on who you think is going to be available in the future rounds. So, for instance, you might hear this term like, oh, wide receiver is very deep this year. And so what that really is a colloquialism for, we think we'll be able to get a good wide receiver later if we don't take one now.
Okay.
And so
the wide receivers this year are kind of on the back burner. We don't have to worry too much. It's the linebackers that people really want this year, sort of like that?
Yeah, something like that. Basically kind of saying, well, if I don't choose a wide receiver now, what's the chances of a wide receiver that we still value or think they'll be valuable are going to be available in later rounds? So that's what the uncertain is. The uncertain is I don't know what other teams are going to do between my current pick and the next pick.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so bring your research into this, Jeff Ullman. What particular aspects have you explored with your research?
So what we are really interested in is the player evaluation is always difficult, and that's kind of a current ongoing area of research. But taking that piece out, just saying like, well, suppose we have player evaluations that we have a reasonable degree of confidence, or more importantly, we have a reasonable degree of variability in those evaluation. So we know what how variable they may be. Okay, and so then what we're really interested in is evaluating that uncertainty and then future rounds of the draft as the draft evolves. So trying to help you make that decision between that wide receiver and that cornerback. Now, if you're feeling that they're both fairly valued highly, what's the trade-off if I choose the cornerback versus the wide receiver? Mm-hmm. And to do that, what we really do is essentially assign all of our competing teams a strategy, and we simulate their drafting behavior based off their team needs based on what their roster looks like.
Your evaluation or their evaluation?
I mean, the team needs are relatively, I would say, widely known. I mean, if
are
you
they?
Go,
uh-huh.
if
it's you, not a secret.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the degree of the need may be up to some debate depending on the team. But for instance, you could look at a team like the Cleveland Browns, and it's fairly undebated, without much debate, that you can say, they probably could use a quarterback at some point. Brian Hoyer's there, but it's not really determined whether he is the answer or he is a franchise quarterback. So you could, for instance, say, well, Cleveland Browns, one of their positional needs is quarterback. And you could do the same thing kind of throughout all the different.
Gotcha.
So those needs are relatively known. So knowing those and knowing kind of the general valuations of players, your valuations as well as the perceptions of perhaps kind of players overall, you could essentially simulate drafts in playing different scenarios. So you could do this manually, and some teams do, but you could essentially, we created an algorithm that essentially runs the draft and runs it thousands of times and in effect creates the probability of a player's being available in the future round. So given my current selection, I can estimate likelihoods of other players being available in the future, which may help me decide between two different positions.
It doesn't mean that player will be available. It's just the odds that player will be available according to all these thousands or more than thousands of scenarios being run?
As many as you would really have time to run. But yeah, you're in the order of tens of thousands of scenarios.
Mm-hmm. So how has your research come to practical use?
So this is really what helps you. We try to analyze is trying to distill the emotion out of the decision. And so this arises in investments and in the stock market and so forth, is oftentimes you'll see people making decisions that get caught up kind of in some kind of emotional response.
I like that kickers. I like that Nate Kading's personality. I've seen him interviewed. He's really spunky. I think he'd be a good thing. Do you want to take that out?
Well, I would say it's more of like, okay, you've just seen two cornerbacks taken, and so you have this like panic that, well, we need to take this guy now.
I got you.
Even though you might, so you'll hear this, you'll hear about teams reaching, and essentially what that typically means is that they took a player that they might be able to get a player of the same value or even the same player at a later point in the draft, and so what this algorithm was kind of intent would be to try to avoid teams from reaching or. Even if it's perceived as a reach, it's not a reach based on that. The likelihood is that, we wouldn't be able to get a player that we value like this. And so it's kind of justifying maybe a reach or at least avoiding one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so teams actually use your research, or where is it used?
So in terms of actually using the algorithm, I would say in terms of draft day, it's not being used. I'm not going to be so cavalier to say that. But as much as I was really trying to get across is the being aware of the overconfidence in your evaluations or being aware of these biases that arrive in your selections. That's kind of the real goal, because at the end of the day, the people making these decisions have a relatively short shelf life. I liken it to maybe someone in an industry making decisions that help boost their short-term gains, like a quarterly return, where it might not be in the best long-run interest of the company. You might argue that you could see some of that in the NFL, where a general manager or coach might be making decisions that think they'll help them immediately or in the short term, where maybe over the long term might not be the best thing for the organization.
She just joined us. Jeff Ullman is with us of the Tippie College of Business at the University of Iowa. His research focuses on one of his research focuses is how sports teams can optimize draft selections. Also with us, joining us by phone today, Nate Kading, former NFL place kicker and former Iowa Hawkeye, of course. Talking about the draft, which started yesterday and runs through the weekend, the NFL draft. Nate Kading, I wonder, once you are a player, you're drafted, in your case, to the Chargers, when the draft comes around the next year and the year after that, and you're already a player, you're already on a team, and in your case, a very successful team player, do you care much about the draft, or are you paying attention, or what are you paying attention to?
I was paying attention. I was paying attention for one thing, making sure that they didn't draft another kicker. That's the sole rooting interest for me my 9 years when I was out there. And I know it's the same way for every other player. And you know that a team has a variety of different needs going into the draft, and you might be coming off a down year, and you just kind of hope that your position doesn't pop up as one of those early 3 or 4 or 5 round draft picks, because anybody drafted in those first 5 rounds really is an indicator that a team is investing significant amount of capital up front and you know, they're making that pick there, so that doesn't allow them to make a pick on another position. So that's kind of – it sends a message to everybody in the locker room, and it certainly adds a different dynamic when the, you know, the new second-round inside linebacker walks into the locker room, you know, a few days later, and he's got a locker right next to the current middle linebacker. So we look at it as current players, as guys coming in to take your job.
Mm-hmm. Did that ever happen to you where you were a current player and you saw – a place kicker come up on your team in the first five rounds?
Fortunately for me, we did. We had we drafted a kicker, I think, one year in the sixth or seventh round. He was a guy with a really strong leg but hadn't had a whole lot of field goal experience, so that sort of sent a message like, okay, you better start kicking your kickoffs a little bit further. But fortunately for me, he was just someone that came in for training camp and got shipped out after that. But it's a reality of the business. I mean, every year, like the professor said, there's 200 new coming in, and that means there's got to be 200 going out because each team has a fixed roster of 53 people, and it's part of the process.
Talk a little bit more. Do you have other applications, Jeff Ullman, for what you've been doing here? I'm sort of looking to the future here. We've went from chalk blackboards back in the 1930s to where we are today. Where do you see this headed in the future, the way players are picked for the NFL?
So the primary area that's still hard is the evaluation. Player evaluation at any sport is always going to be kind of the most eminent thing. Because if you can see it, look crystal ball, look into it and say, oh, Nate Keating's going to have a great NFL career versus another kicker that we're considering, then you make your decision. It takes one less variable out of the equation, if you will.
I guess I'm surprised when we hear that players are not just evaluated for statistics. I know when you go in for a job interview, for any job interview, they want to know your personality, your characteristics. But I don't know why it surprises me that as a player, you're not just a bunch of stats. You're a person like Nate Keating.
Right. Well, it's kind of like the video game. We play video games, sports video games. We get so used to just being the numbers or seeing statistics.
Yes.
And so we just forget that, these are teams and these, they are people that need to be motivated or have work ethics and so forth. So what I see is kind of like the really the cutting edge in terms of player evaluation is somehow codifying the qualitative information and somehow using that and compiling it into a systematic evaluation. But really, the goal of my research and the other research in the area is to try to help provide any type of information that will assist the decision.
Mm-hmm. Are there teams out there that you know of, Jeff Ullman, that are known for deciding more with their heart than their head, emotionally rather than scientifically or statistically? Does that happen or not?
Well, the teams that you would say that the pundits criticize for making reaches might be the easy prey to pick on here. I mean, Oakland especially has been known for making, I'd say, some questionable picks, or at least picks that would not necessarily jive with the overall perception of the player's value. Nothing against kickers and Nate Keating, but when they drafted Sebastian Janikowski in the first round in 2000, the number 17 pick overall, and he's still in the league, he's had a great career, but there were still some questions about whether or not, as a kicker, he was providing a value over somebody else they could have in the spot.
Nate Keating, what are your thoughts on this idea that the human element always has to be in here, and we may never quantify that part of a draft pick?
Yeah, you sort of hear a lot more about it, and we get a lot of that feedback from our coaches in the personnel department once we come in. They're asking us, hey, do you know this guy from Iowa? Is he here or there? But, more prevalent in the last year or two is you see cases like Aaron Hernandez, who came into the New England Patriots and is currently in jail awaiting his court trial for homicide. So, there's some serious back-end liability as well, not just, hey, is this guy going to show up to work on time, but it's also, does this player present some issues, some serious issues in terms of his availability and his accountability going down the road and distractions and those sort of things. So, I think that it's something that teams have become more and more concerned about. As this data and the analytics becomes more prevalent, the real void is going to be how do you quantify these intangible characteristics and qualities within a player?
Mm-hmm. Jeff Ullman, you work in other sports as well with these types of statistics, or not?
Yeah, I've done some things looking at NBA, looking at trying to basically quantify the notion of chemistry.
Mm-hmm. We don't have much time left, but tell us, is football harder or easier to quantify with statistics than other sports?
I would say it's by the big three. It's by the most difficult because of just the sheer number of players and the complexity of the sport. If you sit down and try to explain even a single play in NFL or college football, it's much more complicated than explaining a pitch in a baseball game or a 10-second clip in a basketball game. And so it's player evaluation's hard. Who's actually making contributions is difficult.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to close by asking what the two of you are. Are you, Nate Kading, paying attention to this year's NFL draft?
I got enough anxiety out of my 1 year I got drafted. I'm no longer paying attention to it. But and I know it's a big weekend for a lot of guys that are fulfilling a big dream.
Okay. Jeff Ullman, what are you paying attention to? Have you been watching it? It's broadcast live, of course.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan of the NFL draft. I usually watch for, reaches, basically anything that would signify maybe some irrational decision making, because those are things that are interesting to kind of delve into to see, is it really irrational or is it just Mel Kiper ranting about something?
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Jeff Ullman, associate professor in the Tippie College of Business at the University of Iowa. Nate Kading, place kicker for the NFL for many years, mostly with the Chargers, and of course, our beloved former Iowa Hawkeye kicker. Nate Kading, thank you for joining us. Jeff Ullman, thanks to you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
And that does it for this edition of River to River. Our program is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. And we always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Write us an email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.